Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, the 8th of February already, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show. We are here on KJLL AM 1330, and of course, always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10, and the program re-airs 7 to 8 p.m. right here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show, we are loaded with guests today. A newsmaker interview with Arizona's Secretary of State Ken Bennett. We'll be discussing Arizona's proposed eligibility proof demands for the presidential elections. Also today, a conversation with Brian Miller, the new head of the Pima County Republican Party. A conversation with Dr. Larry Lincoln. He'll be live in studio with me. He's head of the hospice program at Tucson Medical Center. And we'll talk with New York Times bestselling writer J.A. Jantz about her new book, Fatal Error. The Buckmaster Show, as you know by now, is primarily an interview-driven show, but there's always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Well, more than three dozen Republican legislators here in Arizona want a plan to require Barack Obama to produce an original birth certificate for Arizona officials if he intends to seek re-election. HB 2544 would forbid the Secretary of State from putting a presidential candidate's name on the ballot unless certain documents were first provided. These include a sworn statement outlining where the candidate has lived for the last 14 years, that the candidate does not hold dual citizenship, and the person's allegiance is solely to the United States of America. Arizona may have the most advanced plan, but 10 of the United States, controlling 107 electoral college votes, are now considering some type of legislation that would plug what some see as a hole in federal election procedures. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line, Bob Unruh. He is the news editor of WorldNet Daily, the largest independent internet news service in the country. Also with us from Phoenix, Arizona Secretary of State Ken Bennett. Gentlemen, and thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Mr. Unruh, we'll begin with you. What's driving this eligibility proof legislation in these 10 states?
Well, it's the from the folks that I've talked to, and thank you for allowing me to join you today. From the folks that I've talked to, they've said it's the gap that was revealed by the questions raised by Barack Obama's candidacy. The certification statement that was posted online, of course, the state of Hawaii has made available to people not born in the state. So they view that there are questions that remain, unanswered questions, and these are their attempts to make sure that going forward a similar situation does not reoccur.
Mr. Bennett, Secretary of State Bennett, let's bring you into the conversation. What concerns do you have about the Arizona proposed legislation?
Well, there's actually two bills, but the one that you mentioned, Bill, as the Secretary of State, my concern is making sure that whatever procedures or requirements are put into state law, if any, that they, one, be constitutional, and two, that they be practically doable in the sense of, for example, it currently says that an original long-form birth certificate would have to be given. I don't know of many states, including Arizona, that the Department of Vital Records or whatever it's called in each individual state is going to release the original to anybody. But a certified copy of a birth certificate. But then it also goes on and talks about that on that certificate need to be names of the hospital and the attending physician and signatures of witnesses and attendants. Obviously, not everyone's born in a hospital, and so we got to make sure that we're not using language that precludes even a few legitimate natural-born citizens of the U.S. who were born at home or whatever. So we just my concern is making sure that whatever the legislature does, if anything, that it's constitutional and practical in our ability to carry it out.
Mr. Bennett, Secretary of State Bennett, do you even know if any of that information is on your particular birth certificate? And I understand you were born here in Tucson.
Yes, I was born in Tucson in 59, just a couple years before the president was born. And I am going through the process of trying to get either. I don't think I can get the original. I've been told by a director of that department that I can't get the original even myself. But I'm going through the process to get a certified copy of my long-form birth certificate, which is another term that's used in the statute that we need to make sure is that a term of art that means the same thing in all 50 states, or does that mean different things in different places? And so I don't even know yet whether all of those things are on my certificate, but I know that I was born in Arizona in 59. So.
Well, you know that much, correct?
At least my mom told me that. So.
Mr. Unruh, let's bring you in from WorldNet Daily. In your research of these 10 states, does Arizona seem to have the most thorough, if you will, of the 10 states considering legislation in this birth certificate area?
Well, it certainly is a fairly detailed. There are other states that have other details that Arizona does not have. For example, one of the states has, in the proposed legislation, declares that citizens have standing. Of course, you know that in the legal disputes, in the courthouse arguments over whether documentation can be required from Barack Obama or exactly what's going on, virtually with unanimity, the courts have said, well, a taxpayer or even another presidential candidate does not have what the lawyers call, and I'm not a lawyer, don't play one on radio or anything, but they call it standing. That means a potential or active injury. You know, I can't go and sue someone for an accident that happens, you know, clear down in Florida. I have no connection to that. I have no injury, no potential injury. So I can't sue over that, and that's the argument that's been used. They even include a legislative statement that citizens of that state have standing to challenge the eligibility requirements. The Secretary of State has some legitimate concerns about the semantics and procedures in his state. I don't think anybody is going to discount his concerns over those particular operational issues. Now, we just need to remember that the elections are state elections. You know, that it's not a nationally run election. When we have a presidential election, it is 50 state elections happening at the same time, which does give states a great latitude in exactly how they run things and what they require. I think to get back to the original concern that generated this is these folks are legitimately concerned about what went on in 2008. They're not trying to overturn 2008, but they want to avoid questions like these in the future. Not all of these bills, obviously, will become law, and certainly some of them may not be worded as perhaps they ultimately will be when they go through the crucible, more or less, of the legislative oversight process and the committee hearings, and they hear from people who have specific concerns.
We're speaking with Bob Unruh, WorldNet Daily editor, and Ken Bennett, Arizona Secretary of State. It's about 15 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Secretary of State Bennett, are you sympathetic to the goal that is being raised here?
Well, if you mean in the sense of I want our election process to give people the feeling on either side of this or any other issue that we are thorough in checking to make sure that people meet the requirements of the offices they're seeking and all of that, yes. I didn't vote for President Obama. Personally, I believe that he was born in Hawaii, but I am sympathetic from the standpoint that all of our election processes should instill confidence and a sense of integrity that things that ought to be checked are being checked. And as Bob has mentioned, I think what happened in the 08 election has maybe uncovered a little bit of a gap, because even the Congressional Research Service in 2009, I think it was, released a report to all of the members of Congress saying that there really is no process at the federal level, as many of us might have thought there might be, where those kinds of things are checked to make sure that somebody does meet. And as Bob mentioned, they, at the federal level, really see this as 50 simultaneous elections occurring in the individual states, and so it's really up then to the states, because typically we allow candidates for office, at least in Arizona, to kind of self-attest that they do meet the qualifications, or they live in their legislative district, or they are of a certain age. And so, on the one hand, we allow people to self-attest. When it rises to the level of whether somebody is qualified to be president of the United States, when we then don't have a process to confirm key facts to make sure that they are eligible, I am sympathetic that we need to have some process. And it sounds like they don't have one at the federal level, and that is what I think is giving rise to the states, or at least 10 states, including Arizona, considering doing something at the state level.
Bob Unruh, would you agree with that, that this seems to perhaps clarify a vetting process in some of these states?
Well, absolutely. The Secretary of State is right. There is a constitutional provision that it's slightly vague. It doesn't necessarily say you've got to prove where the president was born. There is a constitutional provision that allows for challenges to the Electoral College votes in Congress. The failing there was that nobody raised the question. There was no single member of Congress who was willing to raise the question about whether Barack Obama's eligibility had been satisfied, had been shown legitimately and reasonably. A lot of these folks have a high level of concern because not just the birth certificate is a document that's not yet available. I mean, if you go down the list of documents, his grade school records, his high school records, his records as a public servant, as a state a lawmaker in Illinois, those are not available. His college records. There are all sorts of things like this that if it were a single document, I think, and all of the other records were available, I think people would be brushing this off and saying, well, you know, it's just one particular document. And we know that at the time in Hawaii had been a state for, what, about 24 months or something like that when Barack Obama was born. We can understand if there's a hole in the documentation system there at that time. But you get all of these documents being missing at the same time, and that's what raises a concern. Then you have a scenario that comes up where no one in Congress, there's a constitutional provision that provides a chain of command, a chain of succession. Excuse me, it says if the president-elect is not eligible, and it goes on to determine how the succession would succeed. Well, that obviously implies that there's the possibility that the people would choose a president-elect who is not eligible, does not qualify under the Constitution, and it provides procedures for that eligibility or qualifications. Given that, and the fact that no questions were raised, then of course it becomes incumbent upon the states to say, if the federal system is not operating, if it does not do what it has to do, then we as states have to take it into our hands, and we have to do something that is going to satisfy the requirement.
Secretary of State Bennett, you said there are two pieces of legislation. Are they very similar up in Phoenix?
The two that I'm aware of are quite similar. The other bill adds a requirement of a sworn statement attesting that the candidate's both parents were American citizens at the time of the candidate's birth. So it kind of pulls in the whole 14th Amendment debate to some degree. But that additional requirement is in the second bill that's not in the first bill. And as Bob mentioned, the legislative process is fairly grueling, and especially with an issue like this that is so controversial and newsworthy, both bills will, you know, work their way through the legislative process, and all of those questions will be vetted out, and I think everything will either come together in one form or another, or if it can't, it will die, you know, in that process. But right now there are two bills very similar. The second one adds to the list that you said to your listeners, this idea that there has to be some sworn statement about the citizenship of both parents at the time of the birth.
Okay, we've only got about a minute to go. Bob Unruh, some final words. Do you expect at least something coming out of this, out of the 10 states that are considering eligibility proof demands?
Well, I expect that something will become law in one of at least one or two or three of the states. I'm working on an update right now. It looks like there's at least three or four other states that are either considering or have introduced this legislation now, in addition to the 10 states. So it would be unlikely that everything would fail completely across the country. And at that point, you have to look at the specific requirements of the bill that becomes law in whatever state, and then you can start evaluating the impact. You really can't until you know that. The states are all different.
Okay, Bob Unruh from WorldNet Daily, thank you for all of your research and kind of bringing this all together on the 10 states. And Ken Bennett, Arizona Secretary of State, thank you also for being with us. Gentlemen, thanks.
Thank you.
It's 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Next up, Brian Miller. He is the new Pima County Republican chair. We'll talk with Mr. Miller right after this.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroAmorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's 25 minutes now past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Pima County Republicans have a new leader. He is Brian Miller, former congressional candidate in Congressional District Number 8. Mr. Miller is a major and senior pilot in the U.S. Air Force Reserve, 45th Fighter Squadron at Davis Mountain Air Force Base. Mr. Miller describes himself as a constitutional conservative Republican, and he joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Mr. Miller, thanks for being with us.
Bill, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. I always enjoyed my time on your show.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for being with us on the radio. What are some of your priorities? And as I say, you describe yourself as a constitutional conservative Republican. Define for us what that means and some of your priorities now as you lead local Republicans.
I think the definition of constitutional conservative is pretty straightforward. I think that the Constitution means what it says, and that I think that the government has a mandate to stay within the bounds of it. As far as what we're doing in the local Pima GOP, right now we're doing a lot of internal reorganization and structural enhancement, and we're gearing up for the upcoming election, both at the end of 2011 and, of course, in 2012. In 2011, we have the city council and the mayor's race, and we're looking forward to that. And, of course, and then a little further down the road, the congressional elections and county elections and federal elections. So, a lot of exciting things happening.
The Tea Party certainly flexed its muscles at the statewide GOP convention. How strong is the Tea Party? What's your assessment of it here locally?
Well, the Tea Party, the definition of Tea Party has certainly changed. I don't think anyone would deny that when you say Tea Party, what you're talking about now is not the same as what you're talking about a year ago, and certainly not 2 years ago when it sort of had its modern day beginnings. And it is an interesting phenomenon. Certainly, there are a lot of us Tea Partiers that are actively involved in politics, even at in the party structure. I know, I'm not the only one that was newly elected in December at the GOP organizational meeting. Our executive board is just flush with a lot of new faces, first time involvement at this level. And there's a lot of excitement going forward because not just from the Tea Party perspective, but just having new ideas and new perspectives to come in and say, let's shake it up a little bit and let's see if we can't run this thing more effectively.
Voters who are registered as, quote, party not designated, are known, of course, as independents. They've had a huge surge in the past decade. Now the independents really controlling the numbers when it comes to majority. Now, what does that mean for candidates? Are they going to have to work harder not only to attract these voters, but also to get them to turn out to vote?
Yes, but they're going to have to work definitely harder to attract them, for sure, because I think a lot of the independent mindset, or the reason that the numbers have surged so, is because there's a lot of distrust, and I think rightly so, with the way that politicians have behaved and the way that the bureaucracy responds to the needs of the people. And so I think that the primary problem or the primary hurdle that candidates are going to have is convincing those independents that, you know, the line, well, you can trust me, or you can trust me now. That's a hard sell, and they're going to have their work cut out for them.
And not everyone agrees that the voter registration trend is a sign of a race to the middle of the political spectrum. After all, independent voters really don't show up at the polls in numbers proportional to their surge in registration. Agreed?
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, well, I think we saw that this last election cycle. I think that might have been a surprise to a lot of people.
In the remaining minute or so, what do you take away from what's going on in Phoenix? Would you rather see more emphasis on the budget and less on some of these social engineering issues?
I think that if we focus on the budget, I think that in the end, that'll be not only because that's the right thing to do, but that it'll be good politically, and by getting off track on some other sort of sidebar issues, I think that's going to dilute what needs to be done, and the fiscal house needs to be mended.
Okay, Brian Miller, thank you so much for talking with us, and good luck as head of the Pima County Republicans. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. It's about 30 minutes now, coming up on 30 minutes past the hour. In the second half hour, we'll talk about hospice at the TMC, and we'll talk with best-selling author J.A. Jantz. That's coming up on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and buckmastershow.com.
Tucson's Jolt.
Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Lawmakers are talking about two bills that would expand restrictions on federal funding of abortions. Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand says the restrictions will raise health care costs for women.
It is a tax on all women who want access to a full range of reproductive health care. It undermines that woman's ability to make her own decisions, the most important decisions in her life, with her and her doctor.
Egypt's government is taking steps to change the country's constitution. It's one of the things protesters have been asking for. North and South Korea are talking to each other for the first time in months. They've ended working-level military talks today and plan more tomorrow. Pirates attacked and boarded an Italian-owned oil tanker in the Indian Ocean. It was on the way from Sudan to Malaysia when five people attacked, and with small arms and rocket-propelled grenades. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Ford Service presents Mike Rowe talking about getting to work.
No, that's wrong.
Why don't you just tell us what you're talking about then?
I'm talking about getting the works at a Ford dealership.
Ah, the works is an oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection, and more. Just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate.
See, now you're talking about the works.
Well, with the works, there's a lot to talk about.
Visit your Ford dealer and see if the works works for you.
Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating dealership for rebate details through 3/31/11.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. See your doctor for checkups and call for a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate has plant sterols shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-747-0319. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-747-0319. That's 1-800-747-0319.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show. We are always open here on the Buckmaster Show to listeners who have ideas for some of our guests, and our next interview comes from one of those ideas. Dr. Larry Lincoln is the director of the hospice program at Tucson Medical Center. One of our listeners said, you got to get Dr. Lincoln on your show. He knows everything about hospice. And I said, why not? And Dr. Lincoln is here in studio with me. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Tell me about the TMC Hospice Program.
TMC Hospice started about 20 years ago, and we've evolved into a medium-sized hospice with about 100 patients. In the last 3 years, we moved from one of the oldest desert buildings that was the beginning of Tucson Medical Center into our new building, which houses the administration, the home care side, which represents about 90% of our patients, and a new 16-bed inpatient unit which is absolutely gorgeous.
I love some of the old buildings on the TMC campus. So you were able to retain some of that, the old feel of early Arizona, early kind of 20th century Arizona.
We did for many, many years, and now Pepe's House is a state-of-the-art hospice building now.
Okay, so this is a new
building. Very beautiful. We have 16 beds each. We have four pods with four rooms. Each room is private with large bath, beautiful courtyards, and we can actually, with the double doors, wheel the beds, patient beds out into the courtyard so they can hear the birds and the water from our fountains.
There's so much confusion, Dr. Lincoln, about what hospice is and what hospice isn't. Give us your definition of hospice.
Hospice was established to take care of people who have decided to move from a life-prolonging treatment to comfort care. The government has pretty much decided, since a lot of it's Medicare funded, to admit people who have a six-month lifespan, although quite a few people live longer than that.
You do have graduates, so to speak, from hospice, people who can be in hospice more than one time.
Exactly. We have graduates on both ends, really. Most graduates, of course, pass on, but we have a lot of patients who actually stabilize or improve in hospice care, and then we must disenroll them because their life expectancy is prolonged. Some of them will be readmitted later as the decline starts again.
Talk a little bit about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She's a name that's very familiar, I know, to you and many who are in end-of-life medicine.
In 1969, Elizabeth, who was a Swiss-born psychiatrist, wrote a book based on her interviews with people who had cancer at the University of Chicago hospitals. In those days, people didn't talk about dying, so she asked if she could interview cancer patients, and what she discovered is that most patients knew that they had terminal illness. They told Elizabeth, but asked Elizabeth not to tell the family that they knew because they were worried that the family would think they were giving up. And she wrote a book that basically said it's okay to talk about it because people already know. In that book, she talked about the five stages that people go through in dying, and of course, soon after that, she stopped talking about it because she realized that was somewhat simplistic, and it became, she really advanced from that. It's interesting these days that people still refer to that as if that were her fixed model.
That five stages of dying.
Yes. Yeah. Elizabeth began to do workshops for the dying and soon realized that the caregivers who were bringing the dying needed the workshops often more than the dying. And soon her life, death, and transition workshops were open to everyone. In 1984, I attended one of those workshops because I was working 15 hours a day as a busy infectious disease specialist and couldn't imagine doing this at this pace for 30 more years, but I had no idea how to reinvent myself. And I attended one of her workshops and discovered why my childhood events had affected me to be such a workaholic perfectionist. I wrote a story about that workshop.
So what you're saying, basically a lot of your life experience had driven you to this point.
Exactly.
In your career, and this is something that resonated with you, that working with people that are in their end stages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tucson Medical Center asked Elizabeth and me to do a workshop for healthcare professionals in Tucson. And after that, my wife and I began the Growth and Transition Program, which we're continuing today, weekend workshops based on that work. And soon after that, TMC began to define a hospice program and asked me to be medical director because I was working with the death and dying maven.
Tell me a little bit about who qualifies for hospice. Is it... I know there are certain regulations that must be followed, so just a quick overview on that. We've only got about 3 minutes to go, Dr. Lincoln.
Anyone who is within 6 months lifespan, which is, as I said, that's approximate. It doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. Initially, it was mostly cancer patients, but we have heart patients, lung pulmonary disease patients, kidney failure, senility, weight loss. Anyone who decides to stop life-prolonging treatment and choose comfort care, we may admit to hospice.
Yeah, there was a story on the top of the news, actually, I think, as I was driving in to the radio station. I think it was at the on the CBS News at the 8 a.m. hour this morning, talking about that there's been a study that it's better for doctors to inform their patients that they are coming up on the end-of-life issues. They were specifically referring to cancer patients, rather than keeping this from patients, because some doctors, according to the study, still want to keep that information from patients.
That's correct. Fortunately, most of the oncologists that we work with are extremely good, extremely good at keeping their patients informed.
What should we know about how the family should, what questions need to be raised when the family gets together and decides whether hospice would be the right approach?
I think the most important thing is the families have a discussion with their loved ones and really give the their loved ones all the choices possible, not just one or two choices, but have them look at all the choices. We're willing to come out and visit any family. We have great nurses that do admissions and discuss the hospice option. People really need to know that if they sign up for hospice, it doesn't mean that they can't change their minds. And we do have people that change their minds and decide to go for life-prolonging care.
We're going to have to wrap it up, but I know you've got a fundraiser. Quick plug for the TMC Hospice Program. You've got a fundraiser coming up.
Yes, it's at Star Pass. It's called Rock and Rodeo. Our volunteers created the program, and we raise over $100,000 a year for our hospice.
And as full disclosure, I bought one of the raffle tickets. So
great.
We'll see. We'll keep
good
we'll,
luck.
Thank you, Dr. Lincoln. We'll keep. I'll keep my fingers crossed. Dr. Larry Lincoln has been talking with us on the Buckmaster Show. He's director of the hospice program at Tucson Medical Center. Good luck, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. BuckmasterShow.com on KJLL. We have J.A. Jantz, New York Times bestselling author, coming up next. Sweep the streets I used to own.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Wasn't supposed to be.
All right, it's 48 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and BuckmasterShow.com. It's always a pleasure to welcome J.A. Jantz, New York Times bestselling author. And as I like to say, Judy, whenever you put on a new book, all of your legions of fans like to stand up and applaud. So they're out there standing up and applauding because the new book is Fatal Error. It's book number, we've lost count.
It's 40-something.
I tried to count them last night and I lost track. It's over 40 books. But this one brings back the Ollie Reynolds. This is part of the Ollie Reynolds series.
Book number six.
Ollie Reynolds. And of course, there's the J.P. Beaumont series, the Joanna Brady series, the four interrelated Southwestern thrillers featuring our good friends,
the Walker family.
J.A. Jantz joins us on the Buckmaster Show, and she has just started her book tour. She was up in Phoenix. We had a brief conversation with you last week. How's the tour going?
Oh, it's been wonderful. I've been partnering with libraries in the Phoenix area.
You're a former librarian.
I'm a recovering librarian. And we had crowds of 250 people in one library after another, with standing room only, turning away people at the door. The response to this book has really been wonderful.
Is this one of your, I always ask you this, is this one of your favorite books? I guess every book that you just complete is one of your favorite books.
Well, it's always...
But you're always working so far ahead, because I know now in your mind you're thinking
I'm
the next book, which
The next book. The next book is the next Beaumont book, which is due out this summer, and it's written and in New York. What I'm working on is the Ollie Reynolds book for next year, and that baby doesn't even have a name yet.
But it's got the old Judy Jantz, J.A. Jantz.
The wheels are turning, yes.
Where do we go next? But this book, let's talk about Fatal Error, and what is Ollie up to now?
Well, Ollie has a character flaw in that she is completely incapable of minding her own business. And so
a little
when
bit
a friend,
of a busybody there.
So when a friend comes asking her for help in locating her missing fiancé, Ollie is bound to try to do what she can. 3 years ago, I was in back east on a book tour visiting with a friend, and she was going on and on about her wonderful fiancé. He was so smart, and they had such intellectual, philosophical conversations, and she had was getting ready to quit her job and move cross-country to be with him. She had chosen her dress. She had chosen her rings. They had picked out a condo development where they were going to buy a unit. But in the course of dinner, she managed to mention that she had never met the guy. And so Bill and I sort of dropped our jaws and said, are you nuts?
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe that made her a little cross, but she started trying to set dates to see him. And every time she was supposed to go there, he was called out of town. There was illness in the family.
That's a little bit suspicious.
Finally, she fired a private detective and discovered he had five fiancés.
Oh, my.
And so this book
mirrors a lot of
what happened to her. This guy picked on women who were in the public eye, because when he figured when the jig was up, they would be too ashamed to tell on him. Well, I've told you before, and I will say again, if people have friends who write mysteries, they should never make them mad, because we do have our ways of getting even. And in this book, that guy dies a terrible death.
Oh, my goodness. We won't talk about what terrible death that is, but we can only imagine.
And we won't tell who did it either, because I want people to read the book. But a lot of what's in this book is taken directly from her story. When I'm out talking, I'll see men in the audience sort of start shaking their heads as if to say, this woman must be incredibly stupid to fall for that. She's not stupid. She's a physician, an MD, and a trained psychiatrist.
Oh, geez.
But you don't have to be on the internet to fall for a pack of lies. I was with my first husband for 18 years, and he had been dead for 12 when I discovered he didn't graduate from Kingman High School the way he told me. And, you know, I sort of wondered why we never went to class reunions, and now I know.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit awkward, wouldn't it, going back to Kingman High. You are a Bisbee, not native, but Bisbee is your hometown.
Yes.
Spent a lot of time in Bisbee, and you feel very strongly about Bisbee. It's one of the places you like to continually to visit.
The bookstore there, Atalanta, says that my books single-handedly keep her little bookstore in business.
Wow.
Because she sells my books every single day of the year. And I went there on Super Bowl Sunday and had a big signing. So,
just this past Sunday, we're down there. Yes,
2 days ago. But I feel a real kinship to Bisbee. It's a small mining town in the West. And that's one of the reasons I felt so at home when I went to visit Grass Valley doing research for this book. Because I had never been in Grass Valley, but I recognized it. It's a mining town. And everything that goes with it was completely familiar to me.
We are speaking with J.A. Jance, New York Times bestselling author. Her newest book, just out, I think it was actually officially released within the past week or so.
February 1st,
yeah,
yes.
The book is called Fatal Error, and it's part of the Allie Reynolds suspense series. So now, you said you were working on the next Allie. What about the other series? You got some other?
Well,
how do you work all the series?
Well, you have to remember, I have four sets of characters,
yes.
And there's only one of me.
Oh, so, really? You mean you can't be in two places at one time?
I have not mastered that skill.
You can't be at your home in Seattle and your home in Tucson at the same time.
I can't.
All right.
So this summer belongs to J.P. Beaumont. It'll be Betrayal of Trust will be the 20th book featuring that detective. I'm working on Allie Reynolds number 7. That means that Joanna Brady won't be back until July of 2012. But believe me, I'm writing as fast as I can. If people want to know what's going on in my life, they can go to the website and read my blog. It's sort of like
jajance.com.
Yes, and the blog is kind of a window on my world. I think a lot of people believe that writers live hermetically sealed existences. And if you read the blog, you'll find out that, you know,
you're working.
We don't.
Working. Even when you're on tour, you're probably working a little bit writing, aren't you? Aren't you working just about every day writing?
I'm not writing a book right now. Yesterday I did 4-hour-long events, and my mind was fried. I could barely remember what I was supposed to say in the talk, to say nothing of create something. I have come to a sticking place in that book, and in the back of my mind, I'm working on resolving that sticking place. And I think when it's time to go back to that book, I'll be ready to roll with it. But the thing about writer's block is it really exists.
Have you had writer's block ever in your career?
Absolutely.
Really? And how long did it last? And what was the remedy to get you over the hill?
Okay. For one, I was getting ready to write
over the hill, but
let's not talk about
let's not talk about going over the hill, but bringing you to the next level.
Yes. The first real case of writer's block was when I was getting ready to write Hour of the Hunter. And I didn't want to write. I had been involved in a serial homicide case here in Tucson, and I didn't want to write about that real case. And so I had a contract to write a book and had no idea who the bad guy was going to be. At that case of writer's block was so severe that when my University of Arizona alumni magazine came that year, I read the whole thing from cover to cover.
Oh, you had that much time.
And that one was what put me in touch with things that were still happening in the creative writing program at the University of Arizona. And that's when I created the crazed creative writing professor to be the killer in that book. Another time I was having writer's block, and I was obsessively watching the afternoon news here in Tucson because I had no idea what I was going to write. I turned on KBOA-TV, and Patty Weiss had been yanked from the air. The next thing I knew, I was writing about Allie Reynolds yanked from her news anchor spot in L.A. Yeah. So there are things that you do to get through writer's block until finally the light comes on, and then you know where you're going.
You'll be at the book festival, the Tucson Festival of Books. I think it's March 12th, 13th. You'll be very visible at the festival, right?
I will be very visible. On this tour, we rescued a little miniature dachshund.
Oh.
In October of last
year. Bless your heart.
Found her abandoned on the street. 3 weeks later, the dog that was found in a ditch was flying first class from Seattle to Tucson. So we've been sharing her rags to riches story on this, and she may very well be at the book festival too.
Okay, Judy Jantz, thank you so much for being with us. The new book is Fatal Error. Good luck to you. It's always a pleasure seeing you. We'll see you at the Tucson Festival of Books.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up on the top of the hour on the Buckmaster Show, I want to remind you, the Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants. We are out of time. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL The Jolt and BuckmasterShow.com. Have a great day.
KJLL, South Tucson.